Want more stories in your life without adding to your TBR? That's where Audible comes in. I use it for the original novellas, the Plus catalog like Deanna Reborn's Veronica Speedwell series, and those audiobook sales that you can beat. Right now, Audible has a special offer for new and returning members. Click the link in the show notes to see what deal you'll get and start listening today. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. This podcast is hosted by Laura Amin, a voracious reader of romance and young adult novels. In this podcast, Laura interviews fellow readers and authors and asks them for book recommendations of what we should read next. We hope you enjoy it. Welcome to the What to Read Next podcast. Today we have a ton of book recommendations from my friend Laura from Laura at the Library Instagram account. Now let's get today's book recommendations.
Hi Laura, welcome to What to Read Next podcast.
Thanks Laura for having me. I'm so excited to be talking with you.
So excited to talk to you. So tell us who you are and where are you from?
Sure. So my name is Laura Bird, and I'm a Wisconsin girl. I was born and raised in Milwaukee, and then I went off to college in Indiana. I went to Notre Dame, and I was an English major there. And now I live in Madison, Wisconsin, where I've lived with my husband for 16 years. And I don't know if you know anything about Madison, but it's this awesome, vibrant, progressive university town, and it's also our state capital, and there are lakes and bike paths and dogs and some really great independent bookstores, which I appreciate. So I live here. I have a very busy life. I have three kids. I have twin daughters who are freshmen in high school, and I have an 11-year-old son who is in middle school in sixth grade. I also have a dog and a job. And I carpool all the time, driving my kids to their activities. So life is never dull for me. But I have to say that my favorite part of life is reading. I feel really fortunate because I don't just get to read books. I also get to review them because I'm on the team for readerslane.com. And that is just a highlight of my life, being able to do that.
I love it. This is so exciting. You have a busy life, and I'm curious to hear when you read and when that works and what format do you read. So how about let's talk about your reading life. When do you read and what format do you prefer reading?
Sure. Okay. So why don't we talk about when I read, which is kind of a funny answer. I simply do not get as much time to read as I want to, but I think any parent would say that they don't get enough time to do all the things they love to do. It's just one of those sacrifices I think you make when you're a parent. But I do think I read a significant amount, you know, when compared to like an average person. It's non-negotiable that every night I read roughly 2 hours before I go to sleep. I crawl in my bed, I'm off duty, I tell my kids, do not bother me, I'm reading. It's my total time out from the day, and it's heaven. That's how I unwind from the day. But I also, I try to sneak in reading during the day whenever I'm able to. You know, I have a job and I have projects, and, you know, I've got kids, but I always have a book on me, and, you know, I carry it around in my bag, and if I'm waiting in line for carpool or I'm at a haircut, you know, anything like that, I pull out my book and I read. My favorite thing to do is to sneak out of my house on the weekend and go to a coffee shop and sit for hours with my coffee and a book. I mean, I could do that uninterrupted and be perfectly happy for an entire afternoon reading in a coffee shop. But really, I have quite a history of reading in interesting places. My husband would attest to this. I have read, like, my husband and kids, when we go on vacation, they often like to go fishing, and I will go fishing with them. But what that really means is I'm sitting on the rowboat with a book while they fish, which is kind of funny. And I also remember a time many years ago when my husband and I were dating. He wanted to play golf, and I don't play golf. But instead I would accompany him. And so golfing for me meant literally walking the golf course along with my husband while reading a book. So he was playing golf. I was reading, and I think he thinks I'm crazy, but he's used to it by now, so he gets it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I remember going to Disney World and reading in Disney World. That's like my, I was in line, and I was like, I'm just reading a book. Like, it was just like, that was my escape. Like, it didn't matter. I read everywhere, so I completely identify going golfing and just reading a book.
Perfect. Yep. I love that. That's great, actually. Disney World. I never thought of that. I'll have to take a book next time I go. That's a good idea.
Yeah. I read everywhere. So, Disney World was one of those things where I remember very clearly my memories of Disney World waiting in line and just having a book. Reading Sweet Valley High or one of those love stories that did sell for teenagers. They were just kind of like wonderful.
I think that's wonderful. That's smart, Laura. Good idea. I'm stealing that idea from you.
There we go. So what format of reading do you prefer? Kindle, audio, paperbacks, hardbacks? Do you have any preference for you?
Sure, I do. So I'm pretty old school with this one, Laura. I am like real paper, concrete books all the way. I don't like anything electronic, nothing audio, and there's no shame if that's how people like to read. I just, I really like having the weight of a book in my hand. Mm-hmm. And I'm not picky if it's hardback or paperback. I really don't care. It's kind of whatever the library has in stock. I think it has its advantages. Hardbacks seem to survive better in my older stuff tote bag, so there's that. But then there's also something about the smell of paperbacks and those floppy covers that I love. So, you know, I read whatever the library has. I would say I get about 95% of my books at the library. Mm-hmm. I do love buying books, but I have learned that there are certain compromises one makes in a marriage. And this is one of them. Because I have, like, books everywhere. And my husband, like, puts on the stacks of books, and he just looks at me, and he's, like, baffled. And we just don't have any more shelving in our house for books. So I'm cool with getting them from the library. However, I will confess to you, I have some bad library book habits, and I'm coming clean about this.
Okay.
I'm a very, like, tactile, interactive reader when I read. Mm-hmm. So if I'm reading my own book, like if I own a book, I really like to underline things. I take notes. I shove notes inside of them. It's like a real interactive process for me. Mm-hmm. So it's tough when I'm reading a library book because I want to have some of those same tendencies.
Mm-hmm.
Specifically, I really like to dog ear pages. And I like to dog ear pages because when I'm done with a book, I like to go back and see what pages, what lines, what paragraphs really captivated me. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I copy those lines then into a journal that I keep. And of course, I always un-dog ear them when I'm done doing that. But I think sometimes the librarians like see the little lines of where I've dog-eared because I recently got in trouble. I was picking some books out from my local library and the librarian pulled up my account and she said, oh, it looks like there's a note in the system for you from Central Library. And I said, oh goodness, I didn't know Central Library could leave a note for someone. And she said, well, neither did I. So she clicked on the note and she kind of peered at the screen and she made a funny face and she said, oh honey, the library, Central Library says you need to stop dog earing your pages. I was mortified, of course. I turned bright red, totally busted. So I'm really trying to be better about that, but it's really hard.
Yeah, I think maybe post-its, maybe the mini post-its, maybe that could help you.
Yes, I've tried that. I've tried. I need to do that more. I think that's a good idea. I need to work on that a little bit.
Yeah, I see the tabs on Bookstagram a lot of times when people just tab the books and have different
stuff. Yes. Oh yes. Of course, that means then I have to carry those delightful little post-its around with me all the time. That's basically what it means. So I need to develop some better habits, obviously.
Yeah. Sorry you got busted. It's kind of.
I know. It's okay. It's life. It's life. It's owning up to my mistakes.
Yeah. It's all good. So what do you love most about reading?
Okay. So what do we love most about reading? Okay. So that might be like the biggest question of my life. So you're really putting me on the spot here, but I really spent some time thinking about this question. On the most base level, to me, words are magic, right? Like, I love the way that different authors bring words together in so many different ways. It's kind of miraculous, I think, because just with words, authors can create a tone or a feeling or an entire conversation. And they can make sentences and paragraphs that just ease a reader's heart, you know, with how gorgeous or incisive or just perfectly chosen they are. So at a very base level, I really appreciate the craft of word choice and word placement. So there's that. But then, you know, reading is so much more than that to me. I derive a lot of my empathy as a human being from books. I think reading has allowed me to put myself in other people's shoes and to experience things I wouldn't be able to experience. And this makes me a better, stronger person. And in fact, I would say that I think this is becoming a lost skill in our world, being able to imagine how other people feel and approaching them from a place of patience and compassion. So that's really important to me. Along those lines, too, I think when you're a reader and a lover of books, you have a certain curiosity about the world and an inquisitiveness, and you ask questions and you look at things a lot more carefully, I think, than non-readers do. That's kind of a big, bold statement, but I think that's true. I really appreciate that about reading. And then, you know, above all, I read because it brings me joy and it brings me comfort and it brings me clarity. And I think that makes me a better mom and wife and human being. Because, I mean, who does not benefit from joy and comfort and clarity in their life?
Yeah, so true. Oh my gosh, I can identify so many points here. The feeling, just putting yourself in other people's shoes, just experiencing a different world. The joy that it just brings in.
Absolutely.
So if you had a magic wand, what would you like your reading life to be different?
Oh my goodness. I want to read more. But then again, I don't know who wouldn't want to read more.
Yeah.
And I think that's the funny part of the whole Bookstagram community. You know, I follow all these amazing readers and they post all these things. And it's like being a kid in a candy shop, kind of, because I see like a new book being featured and I'm like, yes, I'll have that one and that one. And I want that one too. And it completely nurtures my obsession. And then I have literally a stack of 50 books from the library. Problem. So I wish I had more time to get through all those books because I just don't always have the time. And that's hard when you've got this delicious stack in front of you and you just can't get through it. You know, there's not enough time in the world. And I wish there was.
I know. I love books around for that reason. At the same time, it's kind of overwhelming to, well, there's so many books to choices. It's like, when am I going to read them all?
Can't. And I think I've come to a realization that it's okay to accept that you can't read everything and you can't read every single book you see featured. That's kind of a humbling feeling.
Yes. So let's talk about Bookstagram. What has been your biggest takeaway?
Oh, well, I think the biggest, first of all, I'm still kind of new. I should say this. I'm still kind of new to Instagram. I haven't been a huge social media person. I think I sort of missed that boat because I'm not a millennial, but I'm trying to catch up. So I kind of stumbled into Bookstagram, I think it was earlier this year, so maybe early 2018. And I just love that there are other people out there, knowing that there are other people out there who are as obsessed with books as I am. Like when I found this community, I'm like, oh my gosh, it's amazing and thrilling. And I'm so relieved to know that I'm not the only one who's sort of crazy over books. But that's one takeaway I have. I think that everyone is very kind and caring. And it's like this lovely little corner of Instagram, which I also appreciate, especially during very difficult, politically charged times. I think it's really nice to have a safe space where you can count on people being kind and empathetic. But I think another big takeaway, again, it goes back to my local library, the Madison Public Library. I think they are benefiting tremendously from me being involved in Bookstagram because they are making so much money off me in all of my overtime. I love it. It's so many overdue books. It's so sad. So it's just like this every day you can just see the tally of my fines, you know, getting bigger and bigger. So at least I know it's for a good cause. You know, I have no problem giving money to the Madison Public Library. It's a good cause.
Yes. The money is probably going to go back to buying new books. So
exactly. There you go.
So let's talk about what you're reading live. What's your favorite genre?
Okay, so I have three favorite genres, and I'm sorry I could not narrow it down to one.
I've got three.
So I've got, like, contemporary literary fiction.
Okay.
And then I have classics, and then I have memoirs. So mm-hmm. I would say those three genres are definitely what I gravitate to the most. But having said that, I really read a lot of different things. I don't get into mystery as much and sci-fi. That's kind of where I'm not a great reader, but mm-hmm. anything else I'll pick up and enjoy.
Yeah, I don't read that much sci-fi. I think I've read like one or two sci-fi this year out of the 200. So it's not a big genre for me. But I do read mysteries and thrillers. As you know, I've been on a somewhat a binge of mysteries and thrillers lately, but it's definitely one of those things. But yeah, I don't have a narrow genre myself too, so no worries. Mm-hmm.
Thank you.
So what are your top three favorite books of all time?
Okay, you're killing me with these questions, Laura. You really are.
I know.
But I think it's a great question to ask, and it forced me to kind of do a little research. So I've been keeping an Excel spreadsheet over the last 20-something years, kind of since I graduated from college, of every book I read. So it's a really easy way for me to track all the books I read, and I sort of have like this personal ranking system where I numbers to rank them. And so it was really easy for me to go back and sort my Excel spreadsheet based on my favorite books, right? This is pretty impressive for an English major. I just want you to know that.
Yes.
So I was able, what I'm going to do, I hope it's okay with you. I picked my three favorite books in each of my three favorite genres.
Okay.
So basically, I have 9 favorite books. I hope that's not too much.
No, let's go. Let's hear it. So let's hear contemporary literary fiction.
Okay, so contemporary literary fiction. So the first one is Those Who Save Us by Jenna Blum. This is a World War II novel. It is gorgeous. It is riveting. I was obsessed with this book. And it's my favorite World War II novel I have ever read. And that's saying something because I've read a lot of World War II fiction. It's a beautiful story of the sacrifices you make for someone that you love and how you rationalize these choices. And again, I'm going to bring up my husband. A lot of the scenes in this book take place in Germany in this bakery. Mm-hmm. And I don't speak any German, but my husband does. And so I was constantly bothering him as I was reading this book, like, hey, honey, what does Kuchen mean? What is Zucker? What is Schmaltz? Which they're all like baking terms. It's like bakery, butter, sugar, all that stuff. And so mm-hmm. he was delighted when I finished that book. He was really glad when I got to the end. I think he was really tired of the German bakery words. But anyway, that's a great book. I loved it. My second one is A Gentleman in Moscow by Amor Towles.
Mm-hmm.
So this book is divine. And as you probably know, it was both a critical and a popular success. And it's really easy to see why. It's this delightful, sprawling novel about a count who in 1922 is sentenced to house arrest in a hotel across the street from the Kremlin. Mm. So he's basically shoved into this attic room, but his world opens up in ways that I did not see coming. And it's so beautiful and smart. And I wept like a baby at the end. And I should say right there, let me insert something, that as I told you before, I read a lot in coffee shops. And I have this habit of like finishing up books when I'm drinking my coffee at a coffee shop. And I cry. Like, these books are so powerful. And I cry. And it's really embarrassing because I'm sitting in public, like, ugly crying.
Mm-hmm.
And that's exactly what happened with A Gentleman in Moscow. I sort of made a pull out of at Starbucks, but what happened? My last one is A Prayer for Owen Meany by John Irving. I am a huge John Irving fan. you know, he gets into it with like messy families and orphan children, and he's got some weird coincidences that pop up through his books. And Owen Meany is one of the most original characters I've ever come across in my reading life. And I just love this book. It's about the Vietnam War and friendship and Christianity and baseball. And I don't even like know anything about baseball, but it's so good. Like, it just wrecked me in the best way possible. And I should add that my son Owen is named in part after Owen Meany.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
So do you want me to move on to memoirs?
Yeah, let's do memoirs.
All right, let's go on to memoirs. So I really love memoirs because I love reading how people who write memoirs are able to look right in the face of suffering and figure out a way to get through their hardships. That's why I love memoirs most, is how do they find the courage and how do they put together a support system to navigate the messiness of life, right? Mm-hmm. I find that really inspiring. So here we go. So one of my favorite memoirs is When Breath Becomes Air by Dr. Paul Kalanithi. Dr. Kalanithi was finishing up his training as a neurosurgeon and a neuroscientist when he diagnosed himself with having stage 4 lung cancer. So he was just 36 years old. Like, that's so young, right? And he had a wife and he had a baby on the way and he knew he was going to die, but he wrote this memoir. Like, he turned to literature and philosophy and poetry to find solace, and he created this amazing book, which it's extraordinary. Another one is Love Warrior by Glennon Doyle. So for those of you out there that know Glennon, she would say that for much of her teens and 20s, she was a hot mess. Like, she struggled with addiction and eating disorders and alcoholism. But then she found out she was pregnant, and she had some big choices to make about how to move forward in her life. So she wrote this memoir about crisis and marriage and motherhood and feminism, and it's out of this world. And again, I will say, I finished it while I was getting a pedicure. And I sat in the pedicure chair and I cried. Like, again, ugly crying. Except later when I was, like, you know, sitting at the little drying station, you know, you put your toes under the UV light. And this woman must have been watching me. And she came up and she kind of put her arm on me and she said, "Are you okay now? You know, I saw that you were crying before when you were getting your pedicure. Is everything okay?" I mean, how do you respond to that? I'm like, "Well, I was just finished." Amazing book. And she's like, "What book was it?" So we got into a good conversation about the book.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah. Okay, so my last favorite memoir is Tiny Beautiful Things, Advice on Love and Life from Dear Sugar, and that's by Cheryl Strayed. So I think most people know Cheryl Strayed from her book Wild, you know, her memoir about addiction and finding herself. But she also anonymously, for quite a few years, I believe, wrote an advice column called Dear Sugar for this online literary magazine called The Rumpus. So this book, Tiny Beautiful Things, is a collection of her best columns from Dear Sugar. And they are out of this world. And they're, like, dripping with wisdom and empathy and insight and spectacular.
Yeah, I read Dear Sugar. I read that tiny Beautiful Things, I think is what I was saying. I loved it. It was so raw and it was so honest.
Yeah. And such a delightful surprise. I mean, when I heard about that, I was like, advice column? Like, how is that gonna work? How is this gonna be a compelling book? And it is. It works.
It works.
Yep. Okay, do you want me to move to classics?
Yes, let's do classics.
Let's do it. Okay, so first is Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte. It's got Catherine, it's got Heathcliff, and their crazy passionate love. There's this kind of creepy house. It may or may not be haunted. It's on the moors in England. There's violence, and then there's death, and there's symbolism, and it's fabulous. Love it. I also picked Jane Eyre by Charlotte Bronte. Mm-hmm. I think this book is everything. I mean, it's a story about being an orphan, someone who's not beautiful, but someone who's smart. It's about sticking with your value system and taking care of yourself when no one else will. Mm-hmm. And again, I'm going to point out that my daughter, Jane, is named in part after this book.
Oh.
So, yeah. She's named after Jane Eyre and also after Jane Austen. That's my Jane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And my last classic is, and I technically don't know if this is a classic. It's a little bit newer than these other two that I just listed, but it's Rebecca by Daphne du Maurier.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever read it, but it's just such a juicy old school thriller about this nameless woman who's married to this man who may or may not be in love with his first dead wife named Rebecca. Yeah, and they live on the estate of Manderley, which again, much like in Wuthering Heights, is just this creepy place which you kind of feel like it's haunted, and I love it. So that's it. Those are my favorite books.
I love it. I love the fact there's a variety of books and there's something to pick for everyone's for different genres. Mm-hmm. So you have the historical fiction, you got like a few memoirs, you got some classics, you got you even have a thriller, even though you don't read those. So that's great.
Yep. Yeah, thank you. That was a tough thing to get my hands around. I want you to know I spent quite a lot of time culling that list. Because that's a huge big question, you know, when you ask someone like, what are your favorite books? That's a big deal.
So. Yeah, it is a big deal. I will be honest, I would need to sit down for myself and actually come up with that list myself.
There you go.
I know. Maybe that will be the next job. Like, what are my favorite books? So let's talk about 2018. What has been some of your favorite books that you read this year so far?
Sure. So I have three that have really stood out. The Hearts Invisible series by John Boyne. I had never read anything by John Boyne before. And I kept seeing this book kind of pop up in my life. So I took that as a sign. Okay, I got to read this book. I think it was published in 2017. So it's still relatively new. But it's by this incredible Irish novelist. It's sharp and it's funny. And it's about growing up gay in Ireland. And I was completely addicted to it. I loved it with all of my heart. Okay, it's so good. Another one I read that I really enjoyed, and I was not expecting to enjoy it as much as I did, it's The Seven Husbands of Evelyn Hugo by Taylor Jenkins Reid. You know, and through Bookstagram, I have found that a lot of people are really crazy over Taylor Jenkins Reid. I had never read anything by her before, so I kind of picked up this book, and it's a little bit lighter than I usually go. I kind of like things a little more, I don't know if heavy is the right word, but it's a lighter novel. But I have to say that it blew me out of the water. It's about an actress, Evelyn Hugo. She's 79 and she wants to tell the story of her life, including her seven marriages. And the way the story unspools for me was really beautiful. I really enjoyed that. I think I read it in like two sittings. So I think I sat down to read it, and then I had to make my kids dinner, so I was forced to get up, you know, and feed my kids, and then I sat back down and finished it. I couldn't put it down. And then my last favorite book, I just finished it a couple weeks ago, and I cannot rave about it enough. It's called Virgil Wander, and it's by Leif Enger. Mm-hmm. He is the fabulous Minnesota-based author who wrote Peace Like a River in 2001. And I think Virgil Wander is his best book yet. It's about this small town Minnesota community, and the main character is Virgil Wander. And he gets into this awful car accident on the shores of Lake Superior, and he spends half the novel like with a concussion, which is not funny. I mean, concussions are not funny, car accidents are not funny. But this book is so humorous as he tries to figure out how to get his memory back and his language skills back. But it's also very deep, and there are very deep themes. And what I love about Leif Enger is that he incorporates like this element of spirituality and even this tiny little bit of magical realism, and it totally works. He pulls it off, and it's just perfection. I loved that book.
Mm. I may pick that one up. So I got the Hearts of Invisible Furies on hold for the library. Like, it's available in one library, but it's not. But it's only for 1 week. So I was like, it's a longer book, so I need the longer. Yeah. So I'm on hold for the other library. So I'm looking forward to reading it. I heard about it. It's been mentioned in this podcast quite a few times.
Yeah.
Seven Husbands, I read it. It's one of my favorites of this year. I really like Hayley Jenkins Reid. She's great. I ended up crying a little bit in Subway, which was unique. I was like, I don't cry that often. So it was one of those things where I was crying in public. So I feel the pain.
Yes, I'm with Sarah. I cried at the end of that one too, actually.
Yeah, it was so good. Emotions. And I'm going to pick the third book out. That's when I'm going to put into the library queue. So
thank you. I would love to know what you think of it, actually, of the two that you haven't read. After you finish them, let me know.
I will definitely. So who are your go-to authors? Which authors are in your Audible?
Sure. So all the books and authors I've mentioned so far in our conversation, they have been, or in some cases, they will be now moving forward, my go-to authors.
Mm-hmm.
But then I do have another list of people I haven't mentioned so far in our conversation who I also absolutely love. And most of them are writers of fiction, but some of them also write some memoirs as well. But I would say the one unifying thread between all of them is their writing ability. Like, for me, the prose comes first. Like, I cannot read a book, regardless of how amazing the story is or how cool the plot line is, I can't read it if it's not smoothly, impeccably, beautifully written. So for me, like, that craft of wordsmithing is top-notch. And I think that all of these authors that I'm about to read to you, all of them have that just stellar writing ability. So all of these authors that I identified, they're all still living, with the exception of two of them. And so we can keep our fingers crossed that they will publish a lot more books. More to look forward to in my lifetime. So I put this list together, Laura, for you in alphabetical order by last name. So are you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Here we go. Kelly Corrigan.
Okay.
Jonathan Franzen, Charles Fraser, Elizabeth Gilbert, Robert Gulrip, Kent Harris, and Kent is one of the two that recently passed away, and I was devastated when I found out that he died. I love his book. Barbara Kingsolver, Oompah Lahiri, Wally Lamb, Elizabeth McCracken, Toni Morrison, Linda Olson, Ann Patchett, Roger Rosenblatt, Maria Semple, Carol Shields, and Carol's the second one that passed away. She was a Canadian writer, and she was so great. And when she died, I believe it was from breast cancer. I think it was 15 years ago. I cried. That was a real loss, I think, for the reading community. And then I have Colson Whitehead. Thanks to the Underground Railroad, he has got me hooked. And then lastly is Gabrielle Zevin, who's this young dynamic writer, and I can't wait to see what else she's got to say.
Gabrielle wrote Young Jane Jones.
Yep. She is just stellar. Yeah, I really liked that book.
Yeah, it was really good. I was surprisingly, it had some interesting themes, but it was surprisingly funny. That was one thing.
He also wrote, I don't know, have you read The Storied Life of A.J. Fickrey?
No.
Oh, Laura, you got to add that to your list. I know. It's one to add to the list. But it is delightful, and it takes place in a bookstore. That's one of the main settings for the book. So, like, any book lover is going to love that book.
Okay. You're adding so many books to my TBR. It's ridiculous.
I know. It's a curse and a blessing. I know.
This is the perils of having a podcast. Believe it or not, it's all the books that I'm like, I want to read. So.
Yep. It's a good problem to have.
It is a good problem. So what's your most anticipated new release for 2018 or 2019 that you're looking forward?
Sure. Sure. So the timing of this conversation is kind of funny because for 2018, just yesterday, Michelle Obama's Becoming was released, and I'm dying to get my hands on that. So literally this afternoon, after you and I are done talking, I am going to head out to the bookstore and actually purchase a copy of that. I'm very excited to read that. And of course, the Bookstagram community, as you've probably seen, is going like gaga over this book. So that's just heightened the anticipation for me.
Mm-hmm.
And as for 2019, Elizabeth Gilbert recently announced that she has a new book coming out in spring, and it's called City of Girls. And she said, and this is in quotes, she said, "It's the most fun, sexy, light novel I have ever written." Ooh. So again, people, yeah. So when I found out about this on Instagram, again, people went wacky when they found out this book is coming out. So I think it's just kind of funny, like, what could be more enjoyable and innocent than people getting, like, hyped up about a book that is going to be released in 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
It's hilarious, but like deeply reassuring to me at the same time about the state of humanity, that people are excited about a book coming out.
Yes. Yes. I get excited about books coming out and I'm like, oh my gosh, I need to get my hands on it as soon as possible. So.
Mm-hmm.
So what's your most disappointed read? We have those. So what has been for you?
Sure. Okay. So that's a good question. So I think in general, you know, I do come across books that I just don't like, or that are not well written, or that they're not worth all the hype they're getting. But mm-hmm. on the front end, I tend to be fairly discerning about what I'm reading in the first place. So that doesn't happen very often. Like, I think I'm pretty choosy about what I'm choosing to read. So I'm not usually disappointed. So I wanted to answer your question kind of in a different way. I have a different perspective on it.
Mm-hmm.
I think that there are books that are very well written, but we read them at the wrong time in our life. Mm-hmm. And we aren't able to appreciate them like at that given time, at that season in our life. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, I have an example for you, and I'm just cringing as I'm giving this. So... The Catcher in the Rye by J.D. Salinger, right?
Mm-hmm.
I read this, the first time I read this book, I was in high school, it was for English class. And it's funny because I think high schoolers tend to love that sort of teenage voice that Holden mm-hmm. Caulfield has. But I hated it. It really rubbed me the wrong way. And I remember saying that it wasn't literary enough. And again, I'm cringing. That's so embarrassing. So at the time I thought it was really overrated. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
It was because it was completely going above my head, right? I was too young to understand all those big themes of loss and of war and of coming of age. So recently I reread it and it eviscerated me. Like, it's tragic and it's beautiful. And I just needed to read it as an adult to really appreciate all that it was trying to convey.
Mm.
So I think sometimes, it's just about the time and place where you're at.
Yep.
You know, if a book is not connecting with you, but by all accounts, it's supposed to be a really good book, maybe you just set it aside and try again another time.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's so true.
There we go. Yep.
What are you currently reading?
Okay, so I'm reading two books right now, which is pretty common for me to have multiple books going. Kind of crazy, but it works. So I'm reading one memoir and one novel. So the memoir I'm reading is Everything You Can Ever Know. Mm-hmm. And that is by Bull Chung. It's All You Can Ever Know. I don't know if that's what I said, but that's the title. All You Can Ever Know by Nicole Chung. And it's excellent. It's a memoir of transracial adoption and about kind of finding your identity and facing prejudice. And it's resonating with me personally because my three kids were adopted internationally. My daughters are from China and my son is from South Korea. And I kind of feel like this should be a handbook for parents of kids who are adopted or transracial families. Mm-hmm. I think it's good so far. It's disturbing in some ways, but helpful disturbing, if that makes sense. There are some good takeaways. Then the fiction I'm reading right now, the novel I'm reading, is Fruit of the Drunken Tree by Ingrid Rojas Contreras. Mm-hmm. And it's really good so far. I don't know if you've read it, but I've just a few chapters in, but it seems like it's a really beautifully written coming-of-age story between two girls growing up in Colombia. And there's violence and there's poverty, and it's kind of how they navigate their way through and the bond that they form.
Yeah, I have an arc for Fruit of Drunken Tree, and I tried to read it, and it wasn't the right time. So I may pick it up, I think, the holiday season when I have like free time to read, to pick it up. And I have Nicole Chung's memoir on hold for the library, so I'm hoping to get to it. I heard really great things about it.
Yeah, good stuff.
What books should my listeners pick up right now and add it to TBR?
Okay, my number one book that I haven't already talked about during this conversation is The Great Believers by Rebecca Mackay.
Yep.
Like, I'm going to go out on a limb here, but I think this book really could be considered like a new great American novel. That's a bold statement. It came out recently, and it's been getting a lot of press, and I think it is worth all the hype. So it's a very epic story about the AIDS crisis in Chicago in the 1980s.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't hear of Chicago, you know, you hear of like San Francisco and New York when you think about the AIDS epidemic from the 80s. But Rebecca Mackay did 4 years of research about the AIDS crisis in Chicago, and it's just this marvelous novel. The characters are fully fleshed out. It's a really big, dynamic story about loss and friendship and even the power of art. Like, art plays a real pivotal role. It's a very redeeming and hopeful role in the book. So although the subject matter is sad and serious, there's a beautiful thread of passion for art through the book. And I think it's amazing.
Oh my gosh. I actually had it from the library, and then I got overwhelmed because it's a lengthy book. And I was like, I'm not going to get to this. So now that you're writing about it, I'm like, I may have to pick it up again from the library.
Yeah, it's not light reading. I'll be honest, it's not light reading. But I think my favorite books, my most rewarding books, tend to be those that are not light reading. I mean, I really like to get in there and like, you can give it to me dark and deep, and I will take it. You know, I like that. And I think The Great Believers is just exquisite.
So good. Awesome. So tell us where to find you online.
Okay, so I have a couple places. On Instagram, where I spend the most time, I'm Laura at the Library, and there are underscores between each of those words. So Laura at the Library. And then you can also find me at readerslane.com. And if you've not visited Reader's Lane, it's a great resource. I love how it's set up. You can go to Reader's Lane, and there are tons of reviews. And you can search by title. You can search by author. You can also go to the team tab, and you can click on team. And then you'll see me listed as one of the team members. So if you click on me, Laura Bird, that takes you to all of the reviews that I've done on readerslane.com. So that's another place to find me. And then last, I do have a blog, although I hate to call it a blog, but it's called thewholefairytale.blogspot.com. And this is a place kind of where I really put my heart out to the world. Like I said, it's a blog, but it's not a blog. I take a lot of time to write what I post, and I would say they're more essays than anything.
Mm-hmm.
It takes me like weeks at a time to write what I'm posting, because I really want every word to just be very well chosen and perfect. And it's kind of my chance to be creative and vulnerable, and I hope funny, because if you don't laugh, you cry. So So I try to find some humor, and it's just about being a mom and a wife and a woman and a friend, and it's all of those things, and that's where I put that out there to the world. And I have no idea how many people read it. I really don't care. I don't follow numbers like that. I just believe in being true to myself and speaking my truth, and that's where I do that.
I love it. Oh my gosh, I'm going to check it out.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being in the show.
Laura, I have loved it. I will have a bookish conversation with you anytime you ask me.
I'd love it.
Thank you, Laura, for great list of book recommendations. For detailed list of books mentioned in this podcast, please visit whattoreadnextpod.com/79. If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider reuniting us. This will help get the podcast get discovered by new audiences. For the month of December, I'm giving away a hardback new release to one lucky winner as a thank you for the new reuniting. This giveaway is open internationally. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you soon.
Are you an author, publisher, or book-related business looking to reach passionate readers? What to Read Next podcast is a perfect place to connect with an engaged audience of romance and mystery lovers who are always on the hunt for their next great read. Now, we're offering sponsorship opportunities. Whether you're launching a new book, promoting an upcoming release, showcasing a bookish product or services, we can help you get the word out. Let's work together to bring your books or businesses to readers who are ready to discover something new. Please visit whattoreadnextpod.com/sponsorships to learn more or reach out to chat about the perfect sponsorship or package for you. Thank you much for listening. Your next great reader is waiting for you.